So now we'll cover direct involvement of the firm in supplier development. So buyer creates specific developmental plan for the suppliers based on its procurement plan and the potential of the supplier. So naturally the plan is created based on what is the potential of the supplier, what is the capability of the suppliers to grow, and the potential to take on more products, supply more products to the buyer organization. Supplier side visits by purchasing firm premises helps suppliers to improve its performance when viewing the process and estimating its advantages and disadvantages. So here basically there are site visits carried out by the buyer organization or the purchasing organization of the supplier premises, and they will suggest improvements, you know, including the housekeeping or any system improvements which needs to be done. Inviting supplier personnel to the company's site to increase its awareness of how its product are used. So here it is the reverse way. You are inviting the suppliers to come and see how their products are used and where they are used and how they are handled. So they also have a better understanding of how the product actually fits into the purchaser's the final finished product, and the process of actually integrating the product or component into the finished product. Motivational development can be achieved through consideration of the recognition of suppliers' performance and providing appropriate incentives. So most organizations already have a rating program, so where you rate the performance of the suppliers, and this is communicated to them. And most of the organizations have this recognition program. So either they give you a certificate or a trophy for the people who are outperforming, the other suppliers. Use of supplier certification program in order to certify suppliers' quality, making incoming inspection unnecessary, is implemented by many buying firms. So this is another way you can show the recognition. So one is that you award or you recognize the achievement of the supplier. The other is you actually start giving them some benefit, which is also beneficial to your own organization. We used to have this self-certification kind of incentive. So when we find that there is no non-conformance, no deviation, which is noticed over a certain period of time, then we actually used to make this kind of suppliers as a self-certified vendor, which means that we will not test each and every supply of the supplier. Maybe we will only test every fifth or every tenth batch which is supplied by them. Also, we will only test their product in case we face any difficulty. So this way, it puts an additional responsibility on the supplier that their quality has to be good, so that because it's not going to be tested at our end, we are saving the efforts at our own end by not having to carry out the quality inspections. Buyer firm can contribute to its supplier's development by providing training and education. So many a times, if you are actually sourcing the supplier firm is a MSME, they may not have the resources, or they may not have the means, they may not have trained manpower who can actually impart training to their workforce. So in such a case, the buyer organization can provide this kind of a support. It's a win-win, because whatever training you give will ensure that the quality of the product that you receive will be superior. Supplier and procuring firm agree upon particular current and future benefits which they both expect from being involved in this relationship. So you agree that if there are certain improvements, or there are some benefits which are accruing from the improvements, then you will be sharing the benefits from this improvement. Buying firm commits only if a supplier improves, motivating supplier to improve performance. So you may also commit certain benefits to the supplier, saying that in case your quality improves or your delivery performance improves, then the quantum of the business that is given to them will also improve. and very clear targets are set. So once they achieve it, they can look forward to the increased business, so which acts as a motivation for the supplier. To encourage suppliers to develop, the firm may give such promises as to purchase of large volume from particular supplier. So if they achieve certain level of performance, then either they can promise to purchase a larger volume, or even provide them opportunity to bid for other products, or participate in supply of other components or products. Preference treatment to suppliers when other suppliers provide the same kind of product. So you have other suppliers who are giving you the same product, but if they are developing, if they improve their performance, then you will give them preferential treatment. So it could be that instead of splitting the business 50-50, you may be splitting 60-40, in case of the preferred supplier who has improved the performance. Proactive consideration of some of these suppliers for future business activities, which also we mentioned that whenever there is a future requirement for a new product or new component for a new model or some innovation, then they will also get a consideration or a preference to participate in those businesses. So, features of enforced competition process. So, choosing the right supplier is very crucial through competition to prevent serious quality defects. Obviously, because if you don't have the right supplier and if you don't have the right quality, it's going to actually affect your operations. So in the enforced competition, you are not making any commitment to the supplier, and there is no direct involvement of the purchasing firm in the supplier's efforts to improve their performance. Here, this is more in case of the commodity products, etc., where you have large number of choices. You are not really making an effort to, develop them. You are not investing the efforts unless it's really a core product or a component that you are going to source from them. So here, there are no commitments and there is no involvement in the developmental efforts. So if you're not satisfied, we come to the next point. In such kind of process, when a buying firm is not satisfied with the supplier regarding its price, location, delivery, timelines, quality of the product, behavior, it may switch the supplier because you have minimum involvement. You do not wish to, invest time and effort into developing a supplier. And this, generally, you do it only if it's really a non-core component or input where your spend is not very important. It's a minuscule of the spend. So collaboration with suppliers in global sourcing. You have the short-term benefits, which are like a reduction of inventory risk and costs, as well as warehousing, distribution, and transportation cost. So when you enter into a collaboration, these are the kind of benefits that you will have. What are the long-term benefits that you can look forward to? Cost reduction through increased productivity, as well as streamlined business processes in procurement and purchasing, timely order fulfillment, and prudent management of receivables and payables, payable accounts, and greater level of confidence in exception management. And this is when you talk of collaboration, you are talking of partnership, you're talking of transparency. You are more transparent in sharing your production plans, your future plans, so that the supplier can actually grow with you and he can actually develop along with you. So measuring the benefits of collaboration. So what are the benefits of the collaboration? Enhanced focus on innovation. So when you're collaborating, there is a higher level of transparency and there is less of a, us and them kind of a feeling. So there is a more focus on innovation. So it's not that the buyer organization has to focus on innovation. It's a collaborative effort, it's a joint effort. So as a success factor in terms of reduced R&D expenses in combination with the product and process improvement level, Because, you know, here you are not doing R&D in isolation, you're doing it jointly with the seller, and it makes the process cost effective and also much quicker. Purchasing cost reduction and benefits realized in the total cost of ownership. So as a success factor, containing communication, transportation and ordering cost. So as we said, that when you collaborate, you are actually bringing in more transparency in terms of cost, etc. Jointly, you are addressing areas where the costs can be curtailed. And in the process, actually both the partners win. So your total cost of ownership also comes down in the process. The financial performance as a success factor, including the return on assets and the return on sales for the collaborators. So for both the parties, you know, the return on investments, return on assets, return on sales improves as a result of the collaborative effort. So entering into a formal contract with a supplier, so a global sourcing perspective, what are the key terms? So in a contract, what are the key areas which have to be addressed? So rights and obligations of both the parties. Clearly, it has to be defined what are the rights and obligations of the buyer and the seller. The process of invoicing and the payments. So how frequently, in what form the invoicing will happen, and the payments, how the payments will be made or when they will be made. Applicability of audits, if any. So if the buyer needs the rights to go and audit the seller's or the supplier's premises, this has to be clearly spelled out. Many you know, firms will not allow you to audit unless it's pre-agreed between you and them, because they may have certain processes which they may not want to disclose or not want other people to see. What are the delivery terms? Things like the Incoterms, you know, up to what point will they bear the cost and the liabilities. Scenarios that may lead to cancellation, you know, of the purchase order or the contract. So under what circumstances the purchase order can be cancelled. So, you know, if there is a force majeure or if there is any strike or a lockout or something. So those are clearly spelt out. Or if there is a natural disaster. So these scenarios are clearly listed out, that and of course there will be also exit clause which is provided. So under what kind of conditions you know, the contract can be breached. Quantity and quality conditions. So in case there are any limitations, if there is any minimum order value or minimum order quantity, or the specifications, you know, the quality has to meet certain criteria. So this also will be listed as part of the contract. Transfer of title. So again, this is part of the Incoterms, that where exactly the title of the goods is getting transferred, you know, from the seller to the buyer. Incidence of loss in case of goods in transit. So while the goods are in transit, you know, whose responsibility it is and who bears it. Who has to cover the insurance, you know, while the goods are in transit? At what point the ownership changes? Insurance and claim process. So in case there is, you know, an accident or a loss of goods, then who shall pursue the process? And it can vary, you know, depending upon when the transfer of title has taken place. So if the loss of goods is before the transfer of title takes place, then it could be the seller who is going to pursue the insurance process. And if it is beyond that, then it is the buyer who has to pursue it. But this has to be clearly spelled out depending upon the point or the place where the transfer of title takes place. Applicability of various taxes, local as well as global. Regional, export, import, etc. Now, normally, although you are stating these things, in most of the cases in the contract, the taxes will be as applicable at the time of supplies, because taxes are not controlled by the companies. They have very limited control and they really cannot, you know, guarantee over a period of time what kind of taxes will be there or will not be there. Like, for example, you know, in the budget, if there are some changes, there is an increase in certain tax, or there is an additional tax or a cess which is imposed on imports, then this will be actually beyond the scope of both the buyer and the seller. Representation and warranties. So, in case, you know, there is a non-conformity or failure of the product, so who takes the responsibility? Indemnification by the supplier. So, the supplier will indemnify in case of, you know, failure of the products, etc. Also, if any losses are suffered by the supplier, then by the buyer, then the supplier will indemnify the buyer so that he will bear the losses if it can be, the root cause can be traced to the component which has been supplied. Limitations of liability of the vendor and the customer. So, it may so happen that, let's say, take the example of the car. A couple of years ago, we found that number of car manufacturers recalled the cars because the airbags, there was some defect, and because of which, you know, the airbags were inflating even without accidents happening. It was traced to some kind of a defect in the product design. Now, in such a case, the liability has to be limited to only the value of the product. That means the supplier may take the liability only for the value and for replacement, free replacement of the faulty component. But they will not take liability for the labor cost or the cost of recalling the vehicle and replacement of the airbags. They may also take the responsibility or the liability of delivering the airbags to the various countries or the service centers where the airbags have to be replaced. But there may be a lot of other expenses, you know, which they may not be liable for. So, limitation of liability is basically limiting what they will be responsible for, what are the costs that they will be liable, and which costs they will not be liable for. Use of copyrights and trademarks. So, you know, both the parties, can they use each other's trademark? So, for example, you know, you have the windscreen of the car and it comes from a very reputed company. So, can they use this, trademark, you know, in the advertising? Or if they are using, let's say, a certain component in the car, can they advertise that? You know, like simple thing like a car audio system or a, you know, entertainment system. So, can they, you know, actually advertise it in the name of the seller? Confidentiality of the information. So, many a times between the buyer and the seller, some of the information exchanged may be confidential in nature. So, this information should not be leaked out. Even when employees leave the organization, such information should not be leaked out. And normally, most organizations have a separate non-disclosure agreement which is signed, but it also could be part of such a comprehensive contract. Conditions and scenarios of force majeure. So, force majeure is when there is a calamity, you know, either it can be natural or man-made or whatever, but because of which, let us say that in the supplier plant, there is an explosion or there is a fire or something like that, and because of which they are unable to supply the material or goods. Certain provisions in the contract of penalties in case of failure to deliver may not apply if the force majeure is applied. And this happens quite often. You have contracts with a major supplier of chemicals, monomers, etc. And when there is an accident or a major breakdown, they invoke the force majeure, by which, you know, you really cannot impose any penalties on them, and they are absolved from, honoring the commitment of delivering the material to you. Compliance with respective laws and regulations. So, you know, naturally, all the related regulations and laws on both the side, supplier as well as the buyer side, have to be abided by and complied with. Governing law and jurisdictions. So, what will be the laws which will govern the contract? What will be the jurisdiction? it would largely depend upon where the purchasing organization is, or where the buyer organization is, or where the agreements are being done. It can sometimes so happen that the headquarters of both the organizations may be in a particular European nation or so. In such a case, the laws governing the contract may be of those countries, so the local laws will be applied. Resolution of dispute. So in case of any dispute, how they will be resolved? It will be generally defined, whether you will go for arbitration, and if so, where will you go for the arbitration? Or even if you have to go into litigation, which is the city where you will go for the litigation? Because normally this is pre-decided in the contract itself. Escalation matrix and the process applicable. So even you don't wish to directly go into litigation or so, but for resolution of the dispute, what will be the escalation point? That means if the dispute is at one particular plant or one particular unit, then maybe the escalation first, maybe the head of the particular unit, if there you do not, you cannot resolve the dispute, it may go to the country head. If country head cannot resolve the dispute, then the global organization of the purchasing organization may be escalated to. Compliance to the ethical purchasing guidelines of the buyer. Now, most of the buyers will actually require the seller to sign a code of conduct where they get them to sign on the ethical purchasing. So that means there will be no bribing, or there will be no gifts, etc. given. There will be no attempt to influence the decision makers, etc. So these also will form part of the contract. So we come to six reasons which drive the organizations to source internationally. So one is increasing the level of competition and pressure on the prices. When you are sourcing internationally, one thing, you are going to get the best of the prices and the best of the quality. So in a world where we are having increasingly higher competition, you are looking at global sourcing, because also your products are marketed globally. Constant pressure on the business to reduce cost. You are now constantly under pressure to reduce the prices on your product, which means that indirectly you also have to reduce the cost. As I said, the prices are governed by the market. The cost is how you manage your manufacturing process. So to do so, you may have to go beyond your shores, and you may have to source the material from the world-class suppliers who will be able to supply a superior product at a very competitive price. Businesses need to be very flexible in terms of manufacturing capacity. So you may have a distributed manufacturing, you may have manufacturing facilities across the globe. And in such a case, you also need to look at global suppliers who can supply to all your facilities, rather than trying to develop local vendors for products which are highly sophisticated and complex in nature. There is a need to further reduce the product development life cycle. So, why do you need to reinvent the wheel? You already have, let's say, a global source developed, you don't need to again go and develop, local vendors, etc. Also, in case of highly complex products, it may require very specialized kind of equipment or technology. So, it makes sense that you already have a global source identified or developed, and you actually source from there for all your global units. Customer need and emphasize very stringent quality standards. So sometimes you find that the local manufacturers are not geared to meet the stringent quality standards which are required from the product. And the only way in such cases could be that you go to the global players who are capable of supplying very high standard or very high specification materials. technological advancements across the globe can make some of the products technologically obsolete in certain geographies, there is a need for exploring newer technologies. Today, you know that, you know, in all the areas, all appliances, products, etc., the technological advances are very, very fast. And country like India, I mean, people really cannot afford to change the technology or change the equipment, make huge capital investments. So many a times it forces you, you know, to go overseas and, you know, buy the latest technology from some of the developing countries. The example that I would like to give is, you know, the lithium ion battery or lithium polymer batteries, which, you know, today you try to develop or make these in-house, maybe by the time you set up the facility, the technology may have changed. Same is the case with the motors, etc., which are used in the electric vehicles. So on this kind of equipment, you are forced to actually go overseas and buy it from people who already have developed the technology and who can offer you the products, you know, off the shelf kind of a thing. That means they can actually produce and supply the material with a very short developmental cycle or notice. Thank you.